Look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. Stadium in Cleveland, Ohio, Gillette presents the World Series. Good afternoon, baseball fans everywhere. This is Mel Allen with Jim Britt, greeting you for the Gillette Safety Razor Company as the Boston Braves and Cleveland Indians warm up for the fifth game in this great championship series. Gillette is on the air the year-round with on-the-spot broadcasts of leading sports events. And Gillette also airs the major boxing match of the week every Friday night. In this 1948 World Series, ladies and gentlemen, tribal warfare, it appears in this tribal warfare that the Clevelands have the Indian sign on their embattled brethren, the Braves, and with it, most experts figure a bright chance of smoking the peace pipe long about 2 hours or so from now, because that's all there'll be left to do if the Clevelands continue to keep the Bostons penned up on the reservation, so to speak. However, the Boston's chief medicine man hopes that he's come up with a proper potion today that'll send the Clevelands fleeing back to the banks of the Charles River, where the Braves figure to be more powerful in their own wigwam. Although Cleveland leads in the series 3-1 and needs but today's victory to capture the classic, their superiority is not so great when seen from the standpoint of cold figures, which are surprisingly even. For example, the two teams have the identical number of base hits in the series. 22 for Boston, 22 for Cleveland. In the matter of two base hits, the Boston Braves have 4. The Cleveland Indians have 4. Neither team has any triples. And in the matter of home runs, the Braves have 1, hit by Marv Rickert. And the Indians have 1, hit by Larry Doby. Now, in the matter of runs batted in, the Indians hold an edge 7-3. Braves have driven in 3 runs, the Indians 7. The Indians have scored altogether 8 runs, and the Braves 3, which is quite a figure in itself. In the 4 games played to date, there have been a combined total of only 11 runs scored by the two teams. And the 44 base hits for a 4-game series is a new record, 10 under the previous record low for 4 games, which was 54 base hits, which incidentally the New York Yankees and Cincinnati Reds set in the 1939 World Series over the first 4 games. The band and the color guard are approaching home plate, coming in from left field. And I suggest that we pick up the music as the fans here in Huge Municipal Stadium, and we probably will have another tremendous crowd, are rising to take off their hats and greet the colors as they come marching behind home plate. So let's listen to the music just for a moment. Music is being supplied, incidentally, by the National American Legion Championship Band, which hails from Girard, Ohio. Getting back to our figures, the Boston Braves have received 7 walks, and the Cleveland Indians have received 7 bases on balls. There again, the figures are identical. In the matter of strikeouts, the Boston Braves have struck out 13 times, and the Cleveland Indians have struck out 13 times. It seems to be uncanny the way the figures are even in almost every department, except in the won and lost column, and the Indians have won 3 games to the Boston Braves 1. All low score games, all games that could have gone either way, one base hit, could have changed the complexion of the entire World Series up to this point. And though, compared to other World Series, you haven't had the explosive incidents repeatedly or the tremendous excitement that often occurs in World Series play, this has been a series, of course, in which pitching has been the predominant factor. Cleveland, despite the fact that they do not have any edge, numerically speaking, other than in the win and loss column, which is the most important one, nevertheless has appeared to be a very highly confident team, ready to rise to most any serious occasion, otherwise seemingly content to grab a small lead and sort of hold on to it and watch the Braves and, shall we say, their frustration. Now you've got out on the field of play a clown running around, and somehow he let a duck slip out of his blouse, and the duck is out at the mound. I can assure you of one thing, the duck will not do the pitching today. However, the duck is still out at the mound, and standing there, he's not moving off. The clown has disappeared, and the duck is just standing out there watching this huge crowd of people. And incidentally, yesterday's crowd of over 81,000 set a new World Series record. Also set a new record for attendance at a single game, although it was not quite as large as the over 82,000 crowd that saw a doubleheader here in Cleveland during the course of the regular season that broke a doubleheader crowd record set by the New York Yankees some years ago with the Red Sox. Now there is a Cleveland attendant chasing the duck out around about second base. He can't get him. He's chasing him out around shortstop. He grabs him around the head, and the duck moves away. And now he finally grabs him. Bet he'll taste good on that table tonight. But to get back to today's game, the pitchers have been the stars of this series, of course, and today the burden of upholding that prestige falls to the lot of Bobby Feller for the Cleveland Indians and Nelson Potter of the Boston Braves. Robert William Andrew Feller, 29-year-old right-hander, born November the 3rd, 1918, at Van Meter, Iowa, will be doing the pitching. And he is looking for his first World Series victory. He was defeated by Johnny Sane, the opening game of the World Series, you know, 1-0. And Bobby Feller has been referred to as the modern Walter Johnson. And Walter Johnson found himself going to the final game of a World Series before he could gain his first World Series victory. That was against the Giants in 1924. Nelson Potter, who pitched a couple of innings of fine relief ball against the Cleveland's the other day, pitched a couple of innings and didn't allow an earned run, is the surprise starter, as Billy Southworth hopes that the screwball, which the right-hander throws so effectively with his other assortment, will baffle the Indians sufficiently to give the Braves victory. Nelson Potter's no newcomer to a World Series. He pitched for the St. Louis Browns in 1944 against the St. Louis Cardinals, and his earned run average was less than one, although he lost the last game of that World Series in 1944 to the Cardinals by a 3-1 score when Billy Southworth, now the Braves manager, was managing the St. Louis Cardinals. Now the lineups for the Boston Braves. Leading off, playing right field, Tommy Holmes. Hitting second, playing shortstop, Al Dark. Hitting third, playing first base, Earl Torgerson. Batting fourth, playing third base, Bob Elliott. Hitting fifth, playing left field, Marv Rickard. Hitting sixth, catching, Bill Salkeld. Batting seventh, playing center, Mike McCormick. Hitting eighth, playing second base, Eddie Stanky. In the ninth spot in the batting order and pitching, Nelson Potter. And for the Cleveland Indians, leading off is Dale Mitchell. Left field, Larry Doby hitting second, center field. Lou Boudreau batting third, playing shortstop. Joe Gordon hitting fourth, playing second base. Kenny Keltner hitting fifth, third base. Walter Judnick hitting sixth, playing right field. Eddie Robinson hitting seventh, playing first base. Jimmy Hegan hitting eighth and catching. Hitting ninth and in the pitching spot, of course, is Bobby Feller. There are your lineups. The band is massed out in center field. The color guard. That was the boo greeted the announcement of the umpires, one of them. But the color guard is massed out in center field, and in a moment or so, we shall have the playing of the national anthem. Your umpires today will be George Barr, back of the plate, Bill Summers of the American League at first base, Bill Stewart of the National League at second, Bill Grieve of the American League at third, you will have Joe Paparella of the American League stationed down the left field foul line and Babe Pinelli of the National League stationed down the right field foul line. So there are your lineups, ladies and gentlemen. Your umpires, Nelson Potter, a right-hander, a surprise starter in place of Warren Spahn, although we use the word surprise to a slight extent. That is to say, we knew yesterday that Nelson Potter would be the pitcher. We knew it last evening. We, as well as most observers, figured earlier that it might be Warren Spahn. Bobby Feller has just concluded his warming-up chores. Nelson Potter just threw his last pitch, and now we are awaiting the playing of the national anthem and the raising of the flag. There's the bell sending the Cleveland Indians out onto the field.
Your attention, please. Ladies and gentlemen, our national anthem.
Explosion in the background is my cue, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you a man who's always full of verbal pyrotechnics when it comes to handling this Gillette microphone, a man who today will be looking for a lot of fastballs and curves and some base hits, Jim Britt.
Thank you, Mel. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, as we stand on the threshold of game number 5 in the World Series of 1948. Bob Feller is already on the mound, preparing to pitch to leadoff batter Tommy Holmes, who has had just one hit in 16 trips. And that is my cue to tell you that we now pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
For the World Series and other top sporting events the year round, keep tuned to 710. This is WOR New York.
Tommy Holmes is standing just outside the left-handed batter's box. The umpires, as Mel Allen told you a moment ago, will be George Barr of the National League staff at the plate, Summers at first base, Stewart at second, Greve at third, Paparella down the left field line, and Babe Pinelli down the right field line. Billy Southworth, wearing his traveling gray uniform, is stationed in the third base coach's box, and the first base coach for the Boston Braves today will be Johnny Cooney. He and Freddie Fitzsimmons have been alternating throughout the series, and it appears, at the moment at least, and we're not too capable when it comes to estimating crowds here in this unfamiliar Cleveland Municipal Stadium, but it appears that this will be the largest World Series crowd. It was told me by several of the Cleveland observers prior to the game that every person whom President Bill Veeck and the Indian staff could manage to squeeze into this huge shorefront Lake Erie Stadium would be here today, and there must be at least 8 or 9 thousand standees out back of the portable fence, which is from the 365-foot mark in left field all the way around to the 365-foot mark in right field. Bob Feller is out on the mound seeking his first World Series victory. His regular season's record was 19 wins, 15 defeats. He dropped the series opener, nothing to one, to John Sain, and he now opposes Tommy Holmes, who has one hit in 16 trips and drove in the winning first game run. The pitch? Curveball outside, ball one. Against Feller will be a very cagey, shrewd, experienced screwball artist, formerly with the Philadelphia A's, St. Louis Browns, whom the Braves obtained in midseason. Feller gets his sign from Jim Hegan. Here it comes, and there's a drive to right for a base hit. A fastball, and Holmes banged it on a line between Gordon and Robinson for a single. It appeared, from here at least, that Mr. Holmes had been expecting that pitch since the series opener. Alvin Dark of Lake Charles, Louisiana, comes up. The former great Louisiana State University athlete has two hits in 16 trips and a series batting average of 125. Dark is a right-hander. The Braves have their first runner on. Bob Feller working from a stretch. Here it comes. Ball inside. Dark made no move to bunt. Incidentally, the tactics of the Braves were subjected to some criticism yesterday because trailing by one run, a bunt was called for after Stanky's single in the third inning. And some of the observers who have seen a good many World Series argued that on a foreign field especially, a team is expected to go out and get as many runs. But this has been a low-scoring series. The Braves now have 23 hits. Cleveland has 22. Feller delivers. Swing and a miss. Dark swung straight away at a fastball that broke outside, and the count is 1-1. Third baseman Ken Keltner, who is not exactly anticipating a bunt, is nevertheless playing in about 2 feet from third base because Dark is one of the fastest base runners in the National League. Bob Feller, who has always been a deliberate workman as well as one of baseball's greatest pitchers, is taking a lot of time in between pitches, as usual. He takes a stretch, pitches outside and low, a fastball, and the count is 2-1. Tommy Holmes on first base. Tommy was personally disappointed. He had no hits at all since the eighth inning of the first game until he just banged that line drive single into right field, which was recovered by Walt Judnick. Holmes is being held close at first base by Eddie Robinson, the Texan. The stretch by Feller. Here's the pitch. Foul ball back into the screen. That was another Feller fastball, and the count is 2-2. Near the on-deck circle is one of the Braves' batting stars and one of the series stars, Earl Torgerson of Snohomish, Washington and Natick, Massachusetts. He has four hits, and he'll be looking for number five. Dark is standing in the rear of the batter's box. He's in his first World Series. As a matter of fact, this was his first Major League full season. 2-2 the count on. Feller stretches, pitches. There's a ground ball, a slow one that goes towards shortstop, and that's going to be a hit. Runners on first and second. Keltner tried to intercept it. Boudreau went over to cover third. It seemed to be an accidental infield hit. Runners on first and second. Feller threw a fastball that was inside about belt high. Dark started to swing and tried to retract his bat, but the ball struck the handle, and it went very sharply to the left of the mound, but it had only the power to carry it about 75 feet. And Keltner rushed in fast to try to intercept it before it reached Boudreau, and there was no throw. And immediately, Sam Zoldak, a left-hander, starts warming up for the Cleveland Indians. Two successive hits have been few and far between for the Boston Braves in this series. The infield is in, looking for the bunt with Torgerson up. And he hits a drive to right field. Judnick goes over fast, takes it, and both runners go back. The throw to second base was taken by Boudreau, short of a double play. That one looked as though it was certain to spell trouble for Feller. It was a wicked line drive, a sinker, but Judnick went over fast and took it at about the 325-foot mark in right center. Runners on first and second. That was one of the best hit balls of the series. But Lady Luck didn't attend it in its flight. As far as Torgerson was concerned, Judnick made a nice catch and a good throw, and that wasn't too far away from a double play ball. Bob Elliott up with two hits and 14 trips. Elliott is batting 143. The pitch, strike called. Curveball thrown inside. The count, one strike. Southpaw Sam Zoldak, whom Cleveland obtained from the St. Louis Browns, is warming up out of the bullpen. The outfield, a little to the left of straightaway. The pitch. There goes a long drive to right field. That's well tagged. Jednik going back, and it is a home run. Tremendous three-run home run by Bob Elliott that went 385 feet to right field. A right-handed, right-field home run, and the Braves lead Feller 3-0. After several vain opportunities, the San Diegan came through. Rickard is up. He has 3 hits in 11 trips. He's a left-hander. 1 out, none on. Curveball low. Ball one. With one swing of his bat, Elliott has driven in more runs than any other World Series performer. That was his second, his third, and his fourth. Feller winds up. Here's the pitch. Strike called. Curveball over the inside. Elliott had one RBI prior to that one. And he's driven in 4 runs in this series, more than any other performer. The outfield is set to the right. Rickard has a home run along with Doby. Swing and a miss. Sharp curveball that broke low. The excitement that attended that home run largely stemmed from the fact that very, very few right-handers hit home runs into that sector here at Cleveland Stadium or in any other field. 1-2 the count. Here's the pitch. Strike called. And it's strike three. Rickard is called out on strikes as Bob Feller threw a curveball over the inside. And that's the 14th Braves strikeout victim. Catcher Bill Salkeld comes up. He's handicapped because of an injured groin muscle. But Phil Macy, on the other hand, has 2 injured fingers on his left hand. I was under the impression yesterday that it was his right hand that had been struck. But he has some blood blisters on his first and second fingers. Here's the pitch. High, ball one, fastball. Salkeld has 1 hit in 3 trips in this series and a batting average of 333. Feller seems to have lost not a bit of his poise. The outfield is set to the right. The pitch. Curveball, called strike two. A strike one, 1-1. 1 ball, 1 strike. Before the game, when I asked Billy Southworth whom his pitching nominee was to be sure that it was Potter, he said something that was significant. He said it will be Potter today and Voisel tomorrow. Here's the pitch. Low inside. That was a sharp breaking curveball, and the count is 2 balls, 1 strike. Overhead, cloudy, overcast, but there seems to be little threat of rain. 2-1 the count. Salkeld standing straight away in the batter's box. The pitch. Low inside. 3-1. Salkeld, incidentally, seems to have had the Indian sign on the Cleveland pitchers because although he has just 1 hit, he has reached base 2 other times as well. And it was he who got the base on balls that was turned into the winning run scored by pinch runner Phil Macy in the first game. Cleveland leads in games 3-1. Here's the pitch. There goes a long fly ball to center field. Doby goes back. He's under it. He's waiting. Takes it to retire the side. And in the first inning, the Braves have 3 runs, 3 hits, including Elliott's 3-run homer. No errors, none left, and the Braves lead. The score is Boston 3, Cleveland nothing. Way back in 1869, baseball's first salaried team played the entire season without defeat. Yes, fans, and there's another team whose performance has never been matched. That's the world-famous Gillette Razor and Gillette Blue Blade, the greatest shaving combination on earth. You see, these two are made for each other. They fit exactly and work together perfectly. On top of that, the Gillette Blue Blade has the sharpest, most beautifully finished edges ever honed. So you skim off tough beard with Gillette Blue Blades, 5 for a quarter. Or for extra convenience at no extra cost, get a handy 20-blade Gillette dispenser for only 98 cents. Look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. The Boston Braves have a lead of 3-0. And they already have scored as many runs in this game as they did previously in the series. Dale Mitchell will be the first batter. He has a batting average of .125 in the series. He has 2 hits in 16 trips. Eddie Robinson is, or rather Earl Torgerson, has just come over to say something to Nels Potter. The leadoff batter, Dale Mitchell, is standing just outside the left-handed batter's box. And Larry Doby, who has been the hitting star of the series so far for Cleveland, is in the on-deck circle. Mitchell comes from Norman, Oklahoma. Very capable baseball player. He's done a fine job in this series. No one has exactly broken any hit records, but he's patrolled the outfield very effectively. He's a left-hander. Here's the pitch. Strike call. That caught the inside corner. The last time Potter pitched here in Cleveland was in late May when he worked for the Philadelphia A's and he pitched 4 relief innings scorelessly. There goes a long fly ball to right field. Holmes is going back, and that one is a home run. Mitchell belted a fastball at the 380-foot mark deep into the standing crowd. And I seem to recall Mel Allen's having said something about pyrotechnics and fireworks. The Braves are warming up 2 pitchers and Larry Doby is up. The first pitch, high, ball one. Warren Spahn and Red Barrett are warming up for the Boston Braves. The score, 3-1, the Braves leading. There was the 4th home run of the series. The pitch, there's a ground ball that goes to Stanky. The throw to first base. Doby is out. A sharp ground ball. Stanky moved over into the hole between second and first. And here's Lou Boudreau. You probably can sense through your radio loudspeakers that this is not only the most enthusiastic crowd of the series, but also the largest. Boudreau has 3 hits. 15 times at bat. He's a right-hander, and the first pitch is outside, ball one. Incidentally, these two are both from Illinois. Nels Potter is from Mount Morris in the eastern part of the state, and Lou is from Harvey. Foul ball. That goes back into the stands, and the count is 1-1. There are 789 members of the Working Crescent Radio here, and 137 photographers, not including the telegraphers. Here's the pitch. There's a ground foul that goes into the Boston dugout, and it was grabbed. 1 ball, 2 strikes. Unofficially, we have been told that this is the largest World Series delegation from Radio and the Fourth Estate. 1-2 the count. 1 out in the Cleveland first inning. The Braves 3, Cleveland 1. Potter pitches. There's a drive that goes back to Potter. He knocks it down, and it is an infield hit. A wicked line smash back to the box. Potter got his glove on the ball, knocked it down between himself and second base. There was no throw attempted by Stanky, who came in and tried desperately to grab it. Joe Gordon coming up. Mitch Boudreau, who is trying to put his Indians back in the ballgame following Mitchell's extending home run, is on first base with an infield hit. The second Cleveland hit, the 5th hit of this game. Gordon has 2 hits and 15 trips. Batting 1-3-3. Here's the pitch. Outside, ball one. Potter has faced Cleveland before. with several ball clubs. The Red Sox, the A's, the Browns. One ball, no strike. Here it is. Side, 2-0. The outfield is deep to the left. Rickard in left field, Mike McCormick in center, Tommy Holmes in right. The infield, Torgerson, Stanky, Dark, Elliott third, Bill McKechnie, Mel Harder doing the coaching. Butterfuges, outside, 3-0. Three balls, no strikes. This game has already produced the second largest scoring total of the series. Bob Lemon won 4-1. That was a 5-run game. This has 4. The pitch, strike called, and it's 3-1. One man out on the Cleveland first inning. After singles by Holmes and Dark, Elliott blasted a mighty 3-run home run, and then Dale Mitchell led off with a home run on the second pitch. Here it comes. Ball 4. 2 men on.
Number 6.
Boudreau goes to second base. Gordon on first. And Ken Keltner comes up. That, by the way, is the 8th base on balls given the Indians in this series. Salkeld was just out having a chat with Potter. Eddie Stanky came in to say something to him and goes back to his position. Spahn and Barrett continue to warm up. Keltner has 1 hit in 14 trips. Swing and a miss. Potter threw a screwball, which is his specialty. That acts like a left-handed curveball. 1 strike to count. The outfield set to the left. Here it is. There's a high foul out of play. That came back up over our heads, and the count is 2. The Indians are trying to put their fireballing right-handed ace, Bob Butler, right back in the ball game. The Braves lead 3-1. First inning. And the Indians have a 3-1 lead in series. Potter stretches. He pitches and misses the outside corner with a low breaking pitch. 1-2. Paul Harder is giving coach instructions to Joe Gordon at first base. Keltner stands in the box. Here comes. Foul ball right from the dirt. 1 ball, 2 strikes. Everyone is marveling at the good fortune of Bill Veeck and his weather. We haven't had a perfect day yet in Cleveland, but we have had no rain falling during any of the games. And you wouldn't have given a nickel for the chance of each game going to a finish. 1-2. Potter gets set. Here it is. There's a high foul ball. Salkeld waits, takes it. He took it about 20 feet to the left of home plate.
Number 35, Walter Judnick.
2 men out. And here is Walt Judnick looking for his first series hit. Nels Potter and Bill Salkeld are having a conference out at the mound. Inadvertently, I may have mentioned Phil Macy a moment ago. Salkeld is doing the catching. Macy has a couple of blood blisters on the index finger and second finger of his left hand. Judnick is a left-hander. The pitch. There's a ground ball that goes down the first baseline. Easy chance. Torgerson gets it, steps on first. An unassisted put out retires the Indians in the first inning. 1 run. 2 hits. No errors. 1 base on balls. 2 runners left. So at the end of 1 inning of play, the score is 3-1. Mel Allen may have had a very fortuitous premonition a moment ago about the fireworks. As a matter of fact, and this statement is intended in no wise to reflect upon the brand of play in this series, because it has been good. As a matter of fact, defensively, it has been too good. From the crowd's point of view, in some quarters it has been characterized as dull, but I think that's always been the case, and you doubtless will agree that a no-hit, no-run game doesn't have the thrills that a 7-6 game featured by a mistake or two defensively and a couple of long balls has as far as the crowd is concerned. And it is fitting, then, that in this game, the fifth of the series, attended by the largest crowd in World Series history, I think that statement will be borne out when they've counted the house, because the standing room is completely sold out today, and that was not the case in previous contests. It is fitting that this game should start off with a bang. Center fielder Mike McCormick of the Braves is up with 4 hits in 14 trips and a batting average of .286. He's a right-hander. He once was with the Reds. Feller pitches. Curveball, strike one. That's Feller's big curveball, the one with a wide breaking hook. The count is strike one. McCormick sets himself in the box. He's standing straight away. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. Feller broke off that big curveball, and it was right down in the dirt. A pitch which, if McCormick had known about it in advance, he would have stayed away from. The count is strike two. The outfield is set just a bit to the left, and the infield is moved over. Here's the windup. Feller takes a big windup. He strides. He fires one. There's a ground ball. It goes to Keltner. He bobbles it for an error. McCormick reaching, and no throw is made. Ground ball down the third base line. And it is an error for third baseman Ken Keltner. That's the second Cleveland misplay of the series, by the way. Defensively, they've had a wide edge over the Braves with 5 double plays to 2. And until then, 1 error to 6. Eddie Stanky, the batter. Third baseman Ken Keltner is in at the cutout left-hand side of the infield in the event of a bunt. And, of course, Eddie Robinson, as expected, is trying to hold McCormick close. Here's the pitch. There goes a high foul ball that will be out of play. Keltner goes over. No chance. And it goes into the stands to the left of the Braves dugout. Stanky is batting .300 in this series. I believe we're correct in assuming that this will be the largest crowd of the series. And there seems little question about the fact that this is the largest crowd in World Series history. One strike. Feller takes his stretch. Here's the pitch. Outside, there's a pickoff throw. Safe at first is McCormick. And the count is 1-1. A gentleman from whom you will hear shortly is my authority for an estimate of 83,000. And he's highly familiar with Cleveland Municipal Stadium. And you're highly familiar with him. One ball, one strike the count. Feller delivers. Curveball high. 2-1. Stanky holds the all-time National League record for bases on balls in a single season's play. As you know, on the 8th of July, he sustained a very serious ankle fracture. Was about for a couple of months on a walking cast. During that time, he was a radio broadcaster and a newspaper writer as well. 2-1 the count. The pitch, low. No, it was foul tipped. It was a low pitch, and umpire George Barr indicated that it just tipped the bat as Stanky tried to get it out of the way. The pitch, however, was down below the strike zone, but Stanky had started to go for it, held his swing, and it tipped the bat. 2-2 the count. Boston leading by a score of 3-1. McCormick leads off. The pitch, foul ball, out of play. That's a souvenir for the upper deck. And with that same break of good luck that has attended the ventures of Mr. Veck and Mr. Greenberg in this series, the sun is beginning to appear again for the third straight day. The outfield is set to the right. 2-2 the count. Stanky sets himself. Here it is. There's a solid hit to center field. Dobie back. Takes it. That ball was well tagged. A high drive towards the 380-foot mark, with the exception of one time yesterday when he slipped for an instant on the slippery footing. Dobie has performed magnificently out in center field. One man out. Stanky out, McCormick on first. And the young fellow stepping up to the batter's box now, Nelson Potter, from Mount Morris, Illinois, is one of the best hitting pitchers in baseball history. And that is for sure. One man out. Nels swings left-handed. Here's the pitch. Fastball high. One ball. Nels says he doesn't know anything about whether or not he's not supposed to hit as well against left-handers as against right-handers. But he does. He doesn't try to slug the ball. He simply concentrates scientifically on trying to meet it. Feller takes a stretch. There's a throw to first base. And out in the Cleveland bullpen, Sam Zoldak is loosening up. That's the second time he's been called into operation. This time, I suspect, it's for precautionary purposes. Here's the pitch. Foul ball. That was Feller's fastball, and the count is 1-1. The last time Potter pitched here at Cleveland Municipal Stadium was in late May. He told me the horse had already been stolen when Mr. Mack sent him out on the mound, but he pitched four scoreless innings as a reliever against the Indians. He's been with three ball clubs this year, and his most notable performance occurred in September at Shive Park, Philadelphia, when following a triple and two intentional bases on balls in the 12th inning, he struck out two batters, forced the third to pop up, and gained credit for the win. 1-1 the count. Feller pitches. Strike called. He fired a fastball that caught the outside corner. One ball, two strikes the count. Bob added a slider to his delivery this year, but the most recent reports were that he had abandoned it to concentrate on his fastball, his curveball, and his God-given talent. 1-2 the count. Here it comes. Swing and a foul tip right into Hegan's glove for strike three. Feller bore down, Potter swung, knowing it was in. Bobby should be out of the inning. But the error has prolonged it. And Tommy Holmes comes up. Tommy started the fireworks in the first inning by lining a single into right field. He now has two hits and 17 trips. He scored the first run in this game. The Braves are still leading by a 3-1 score, and home runs by Bob Elliott and Dale Mitchell have accounted for the quartet of tallies. The outfield straight away. Here's the pitch. Strike call, curveball. Holmes is one of the most difficult batters in all of baseball to strike out. One year, he was the top National Leaguer in that respect. One strike the count. Two men out. The base runner is Mike McCormick, who reached on Keltner's bobble. Here it comes. There's a slow roller down the first baseline. Robinson takes it, retreats to first, steps on it for the unassisted putout. And the Braves have scored no runs, no hits, one error, and one left. Boston leads by a score of 3-1.